All right, this is our message for the first day of the 12th month, our new moon Sabbath Bible study. And we are once again going to be looking at the book of Joshua. Whereas yesterday we were dealing with inheritance, we're not going to move very far from there, but we're going to look at some other inheritance issues in Joshua chapter 21. And we're going to also get into 22 as well, and we'll see where we go from there. Okay, Joshua 21, verse 1. Then came near the heads of the fathers of the Levites unto Eleazar the priest, and unto Joshua the son of Nun, and unto the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel. And they spake unto them at Shiloh, in the land of Canaan, saying, Yahweh commanded by the hand of Moses to give us cities to dwell in, with the suburbs thereof for our cattle. And the children of Israel gave unto the Levites out of their inheritance at the commandment of Yahweh these cities and their suburbs. And the lot came out for the families of the Kohathites and the children of Aaron the priest, which were of the Levites. They had by lot out of the tribe of Judah, and out of the tribe of Simeon, out of the tribe of Benjamin, 13 cities. And the rest of the children of Kohath had by lot out of the families of the tribes of Ephraim, the tribe of Dan, and out of the half tribe of Manasseh, 10 cities. And the children of Gershon had by lot out of the families of the tribes of Issachar, and out of the tribe of Asher, and out of the tribe of Naphtali, out of the half tribe of Manasseh and Bashan, 13 cities. And the children of Merari by their families had out of the tribe of Reuben, and out of the tribe of Gad, and out of the tribe of Zebulun, 12 cities. And the children of Israel gave by lot unto the Levites these cities with their suburbs, as Yahweh commanded by the hand of Moses. And they gave out of the tribe of the children of Judah, and out of the tribe of Simeon, these cities which are here mentioned by name, which the children of Aaron, being the families of the Kohathites, who were of the children of Levi, had for theirs, was the first lot. Okay, and it goes on to tell us more about the process. But what I want to focus on here is, once again, we have an issue of inheritance. And in this case here, we do not have the inheritance of the tribes alone. We're now having the inheritance of the priests and of the sons of Levi. Okay, in this case here, we are dealing with priests. It's a common mistake in nominal Christianity, as well as, unfortunately, some of the deeper levels of faith that are out there, where people do study their Bible more and understand more about God's law, which is indeed the sincere milk of the Word that you need to be nurtured by, that think that a Levite is an Aaronite, and an Aaronite's a Levite, a priest is a Levite, and so on and so forth, whereas in fact it is not true. In fact, Levi is a servant race, or servant tribe, rather, of the people of Israel. But out of them came Aaron, okay, and Aaron was called to hold up the priesthood. His descendants after him were going to be priests. And the men's names that we are mentioning here in the book of Joshua are those people. They are the Kohathites, which are a very important part of the Aaronite family. And the reason for that is Jeremiah, for instance, is a Kohathite. I believe Samuel was a Kohathite as well. And many of the important people of Scripture that are mentioned are Kohathites. Okay, they're from their father, Kohath. Okay, and there is also Gershon. All right, there is Merari. And we see that these families play an important part in the tribes. And here's something important. Because Levi and the priests were not given an inheritance, Levi is given a place to dwell among the tribes, as well as these priests, okay? These sons of Kohath, Merari, and Gershon. All right, and because of because of that, and their special place, they're given cities to dwell in that are dispersed among the tribes. Okay, they dwell in cities. Now there is a distinction biblically between a city and a suburb, and that distinction needs to be known, because when we talk about a city in a suburb, we are talking about pretty much the farmland outside of the walls of the city. The city has walls or gates. It has places that designate it as what it is. Okay, and on the other hand, we have the rural community, which the majority of Israel lived in, that was divided by lots for the tribes. Now, the cities were able to be lived in. Okay, the cities were able to be lived in by people who didn't own land, okay, the Levites particularly, but these cities here are specifically laid out for the priests, okay, and they were drawn by lot, just like some of the other things we discussed yesterday. The lot is drawn so that the people of Aaron, the sons of Aaron, are able to know where their family belongs by the dictates of Yahweh alone. This is a very important part of Israelite law, and the reason for it is it establishes jurisdiction. Okay, it establishes the places in which this family has jurisdiction and where they are, their rule or their understanding is going to come forth out of. Okay, and where they're going to dwell. All right, it is going to be a place for that people, and it's theirs. Okay, so while they do not have an inheritance of land like the other tribes do, they do have cities and suburbs that are being given to them. All right, and so that needs to be paid special attention to as we continue to read in the scripture, because a lot of times as we get into understanding the Bible, we start to forget that this is how Israel was situated. And so when we read about a certain person living in a certain place, it's telling us that because this particular place had a significance to the law and to the delineation of property. A good example of this would be the woman at the well whom our Messiah, Yeshua the Christ, spoke with. Okay, the woman at the well, she spoke in Shechem. Okay, and I believe the New Testament Greek says Sechar or something like that, but it is the biblical town of Shechem. Okay, Shechem was a city of refuge, okay, that would have been lived in by the Levites, rather. All right, and so when we read that story, there may be a significance that God is wanting us to consider about that situation. We also know of the historical account of what happened in Shechem with Dinah and Levi and Simeon and things like that. Okay, so everything that is said, we are able to hinge upon a better understanding of that place and what happened there. All right, so as you read on, you are going to be able to pick up, I'm going to be able to pick up, we are going to be able to pick up more and more and add to our understanding if we can keep track of this stuff, which at times seems bland, but as you start enjoying the scripture, the story of the scripture, and the understanding of the scripture, I think that we are able to appreciate the information all the more. Okay, so we're in Joshua 21, verse 9. And they gave out of the tribe of the children of Judah and out of the tribe of the children of Simeon, these cities which are here mentioned by name, actually we read that, which the children of Aaron, being the families of the Kohathites, who were of the children of Levi, had for theirs was the first lot. So Kohath was the first lot, probably because of birth order. And they gave them the city of Arba, the father of Anak, which city is Hebron, in the hill country of Judah, with the suburbs thereof round about it. But the fields of the city and of the villages thereof gave they to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for his possession.
So here we see how that system works. Okay, we see that the actual city was given to the priests, okay, to dwell in, but the fields all round about Hebron, which was the possession of Caleb, son of Jephunneh, was his. All right, and we just read about how at 85 years old, Caleb wanted to go up and he wanted to smite Hebron. He wanted to take the place, slay the giants, and he wanted to make that his possession as Moses told him. So what we see here is a authority that is being given over land from the biblical government that God wanted his people to have, that pretty much the lot was cast in order to divide the property up that would be given to the priests. But it was on the possession of Caleb, so to speak. Okay, so it gives us an idea of how property rights worked in Israel and how they should work in God's kingdom, okay, in the kingdom that hopefully is wished to be established on earth as it is in heaven by most Christians, which unfortunately right now it's not, but true Christians know this. Okay, so we're going to continue reading, and we're going to see some more names that I think we'll recognize out of the Bible and talk about them a little more. 13 says, "Thus they gave to the children of Aaron the priest Hebron, with her suburbs, to be a city of refuge for the slayer, and Libna with her suburbs." Okay, so there's these two cities that are now delineated for, or designated, I should say, designated for the use of the city of refuge, okay? So, as we had discussed before, the roadway system that leads to the city of refuge that comes out of the book of Numbers, which was already laid out by Moses, by the voice of God, okay, is now being put into effect in a nation, in the nation of Israel, okay, governed by Joshua at this time. And so he is what he is saying is these cities are going to be for the city of refuge. This is the whole purpose of these cities. These cities are going to have the purpose of being for the slayer that has slew someone accidentally. Okay? 14, "And Jader with her suburbs, and Eshtemo with her suburbs, and Helon with her suburbs, and Deborah with her suburbs, and Ain with her suburbs, and Judah," which is not the same as Judah the tribe, "with her suburbs, and Beth Shemesh with her suburbs, 9 cities out of those 2 tribes." So 9 cities Yahweh chose by lot to be given to these sons of Aaron, who were of the tribe of Levi, 4 cities of refuge. "Out of the tribe of Benjamin, Gibeon with her suburbs." That should be important because Gibeon was the place of Saul, King Saul. "Geba with her suburbs, Anathoth with her suburbs, Almon with her suburbs, 4 cities. All the cities of the children of Aaron, the priests, were 13 cities with their suburbs. And the families of the children of Kohath, the Levites which remained of the children of Kohath, even they had the cities of their lot out of the tribe of Ephraim. For they gave them Shechem," there's the city we talked about earlier with the woman at the well, "with her suburbs in Mount Ephraim, to be a city of refuge for the slayer, and Gezer with her suburbs, and Kibzim with her suburbs, and Beth Horon with her suburbs, 4 cities. And out of the tribe of Dan, Elteca with her suburbs, Gibbethon with her suburbs, Ajalon with her suburbs, Gath Rimmon with her suburbs, 4 cities. And out of the half tribe of Manasseh, Tanakh with her suburbs, and Gath Rimmon with her suburbs, 2 cities. All the cities were 10 with their suburbs for the family of the children of Kohath that remained. And unto the children of Gershon, of the families of the Levites, out of the other half tribe of Manasseh, they gave Golan and Bashan with her suburbs to be cities of refuge for the slayer, and Beshterah and her suburbs, 2 cities. And out of the tribe of Issachar, Kishon with her suburbs, Deborah with her suburbs, Jeremuth with her suburbs, and Ginnam with her suburbs, four cities, okay, out of the tribe of Asher: Mishael with her suburbs, Abdon with her suburbs, Tekath with her suburbs, and Rehob with her suburbs, four cities, and out of the tribe of Naphtali, Kadesh in Galilee with her suburbs, to be a city of refuge for the slayer. And Hamath Dor with her suburbs, and Kartan with her suburbs, three cities. All the cities of the Gershonites, according to their families, were 13 cities with their suburbs. And unto the families of the children of Merari, the rest of the Levites, out of the tribe of Zebulun, Jokanim with their suburbs, and Karto with her suburbs, Dimna with her suburbs, Nahashal with her suburbs, four cities. And out of the tribe of Reuben, Bezer with her suburbs, and Jahaz with her suburbs, Kedmoth with her suburbs, Mephath with her suburbs, four cities. And out of the tribe of Gad, and so on and so forth. I'm going to end off reading there just for time's sake, because the point is down below just a little further in 4:43. Yahweh gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it, and they dwelt therein. And Yahweh gave them rest round about according to all that he sware unto their fathers, and there stood not a man of all the enemies before them. Yahweh delivered all their enemies into their land. There failed not aught of any good thing which Yahweh had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. Okay, so what basically we have going on here once again is the designation of the cities of refuge. And why this is an important part of biblical reality, biblical understanding, is because every law has to have reasons. Okay, it has to have why it works, the spirit of the law, so to speak, the inner workings of that law. And that law then has an ability to offer us a deeper understanding and a reason for its being, why it is. And in this case here, the roadway system, that would be the lines of the lots between one tribe and the next that leads to the cities that are in the certain spot, and these lines that go between neighbors' properties, one family to the next family. In between there's roads, okay? And those roads lead to a city of refuge so that everyone has a place to go when it's needed. So the borders of a land, the roadway system of Israel, is derived out of mercy, okay? It is made for mercy's sake. It is made to be merciful to one who has not meant to do something, not for the purpose of just being merciful, but because the person is not truly a murderer. But Yahweh says, I did make the law. You know, Yahweh made the law that says that when a man sheds blood, by man shall his blood be shed, which should be Adam. When Adam sheds blood, by Adam should his blood be shed. And a beast as well, when it sheds Adam's blood, it should be killed. Okay? And so when a man does that, the law demands blood. But Yahweh says, I'm going to make an exception to this rule and or law, and I'm going to say that here's a place to go if you accidentally have done it. And the whole framework of land division is based upon this. And this is an amazing idea. Okay, in the United States, postal roads, as I understand it, are what the right-of-way is built upon, okay? The right-of-way was built upon postal routes, okay, to get mail from one place to the other, all right? Well, to get supplies, to ship things, that is a great reason to have roads. I mean, it really is. It's just as good as any. But in this case, this lays out the framework for Israel and why the road exists, and the reason why the roads can't be blocked, the reason why roads need to be maintained, the reason why you must obey this law, even if you're Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who is given by the hand of Moses a land area, who conquers it with his own sweat and blood, and receives it. At the same time, he still has to give the city that is on top of Hebron. to the priest. Okay, to the priest that Yahweh chose for their dwelling place to keep it for this purpose. Okay, so it lays a very important reason for why the framework of land division, cities of refuge, roadway systems are in effect in Israel. And it's actually a much better reason, if you think about it, than the United States reason or most other countries' reasons, that it's just the king's highway, for instance, or the king's road or the Romans' road, okay, in England. Okay, all of these reasons are not as good as the one given by Yahweh God, because Yahweh's ways are perfect, and his government system, from top to bottom, is perfect. Okay, so you have to consider that when you're seeing these being executed in the book of Joshua, when you're seeing Israel take the spiritual law that was taken by faith. All right, something a lot of people miss is the law was given by faith. They were given the law in the wilderness before land was even in their possession. Okay, they were given an understanding of what to do with this. The hope that Christians now, Christian Israelites, do not have. All right, we don't have the idea that we are going to be able to have a land and make it perfect for God, make the kingdom of earth or kingdom of heaven on earth as it is in heaven. Okay, we don't have that concept right now, and because that concept is lacking out of our understanding, it undermines law. So that's something that has to be considered. So let us consider chapter 22 then, moving on. It says, Joshua called the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh, and he said unto them, Ye have kept all that Moses, the servant of Yahweh, commanded you, and you have obeyed my voice in all that I command you. Ye have not left your brethren these many days unto this day, but you have kept the charge of the commandment of Yahweh your God. And now Yahweh your God hath given rest unto your brethren as he has promised them. Therefore now return ye, and get you unto your tents and unto the land of your possession, which Moses the servant of Yahweh gave you on the other side Jordan. But take diligent heed to do the commandment in the law which Moses the servant of Yahweh charged you, to love Yahweh your God, and to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, and to cleave to him, and to serve him with all of your heart and with all of your soul. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went unto their tents. Now, just calling back to remembrance what we had already read prior, many weeks ago, is that Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh remained on the other side of the Jordan. They received their inheritance prior. But they made a promise to Moses, and Moses made them make this promise before that land was given to them, that they would continue to help Israel conquer the remaining land, which is now being fulfilled. Okay, so when that statement was made in chapter 21, verse 45, it says, There failed not aught of any good thing. Okay, and it's referring to the land that was prior mentioned that had been conquered, that they were in the land fully. Okay, that they were there, they had done their job, they had done the thing that God wanted them to do, they fulfilled their oath. Okay, and from that time forward, they're going to be allowed to return back home and now live peaceably, if it's at all possible for them. So that's a important thing to remember, but what Joshua is charging the people with is to remember that they love Yahweh, that they're going to leave the congregations as a whole, because right now Israel's people are dwelling together in a mass. Okay, they're in a camp, an encampment, or an army situation. So they're kind of being forced into keeping the law, keeping the commandments by everyone around them doing so with them. But they're being told that while you're going to be on the other side of the Jordan, don't forget to love God with all of your heart, mind, and soul. That's an important part of who you are. Okay? And so it says in 6, So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went unto their tents. Now, to the one half of tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given possession in Bashan, but unto the other half thereof gave Joshua among their brethren on this side Jordan westward. And when Joshua sent them away also unto their tents, then he blessed them And he spake unto them, saying, Return with much riches unto your tents, and with very much cattle, with silver and with gold, and with brass and with iron, and with very much raiment. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brethren. And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half-tribe Manasseh returned and departed from the children of Israel out of Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go unto the country of Gilead, to the land of their possession, whereof they were possessed, according to the word of Yahweh by the hand of Moses. And when they came unto the border of Jordan, that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half-tribe Manasseh built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see to. And the children of Israel heard say, Behold, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half-tribe Manasseh have built an altar over against the land of Canaan in the borders of Jordan at the passage of the children of Israel. And when the children of Israel heard it, the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered themselves together at Shiloh to go up to war against them. Okay, so we see some bad situations, or what seems like it's going to be a bad situation. Basically, the two and a half tribes that are going back on the other side Jordan make the decision they're going to build themselves an altar, and they're going to do it right at the crossing, right at the place where Israel crossed over into Jordan. Alright, and the reasoning yet has not been explained, but it's going to, and Israel gathers together to go to war. Now this is being done according to Deuteronomy chapter 13, if you need a law to back up why this is being done. Okay, and so Deuteronomy chapter 13, which tells us in 13 verse 12, it says, If thou shalt hear say in one of thy cities, which Yahweh thy God has given thee to dwell there, saying, Certain men of the children of Belial are gone up from among you, and they have withdrawn the inhabitants of the city, saying, Let us go and serve other gods, which they have not known. Then shall thou inquire and make search, and ask diligently, and behold, if it be true, and the thing certain, that such abomination is wrought among you, thou shalt surely smite the inhabitants of the city with the edge of the sword, destroying it utterly, and all that is therein, and the cattle thereof with the edge of the sword. And thou shalt gather all the spoil into the midst of the streets thereof, and you shall burn it with fire. Okay? And it will be, and it goes on to say, it shall be a heap forever. And it's laying out the groundwork of rebellion, of how you deal with rebellion. And that's what Israel was, in effect, gathering themselves together to do. They were planning on going and destroying some of these people of their brethren who were doing wrong things, that they thought they were building an altar to another god. Okay, so as we continue reading to see how this response is going to come out, we're going to see what the actual situation was, which I think most of us would know if we read the Bible. So the children of Israel sent unto the children of Reuben, and to the children of Gad, and to the half-tribe of Manasseh, and to the land of Gilead, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest. Everybody knows Phinehas was a guy who didn't put up with any bull. You know, whenever he saw stuff going on in Midian, he was the first guy to help stay the plague by killing the Israelite and the Midianite woman who were defiling the temple in the sight of the people who are weeping for their sins. So, you know, Phinehas is the kind of guy you want to send when you want to really inquire as to what's going on, because everybody knows what he's capable of and what he would do to change the situation. And with him came 10 princes of each of the chief houses, a prince throughout all the tribes of Israel, and each one was a head of the house of their father among their thousands of Israel. So the heads of thousands of the tribes were sent. Very important men, princes, were sent out of these tribes. These aren't the lowest people, just a messenger. These are some important men who want to ask this question. And there came to the children of Reuben, and to the children of Gad, and to the half-tribe Manasseh, unto the land of Gilead, and they spake with them, saying, Thus saith the whole congregation of Yahweh, What trespass is this that ye have committed against the God of Israel, to turn away this day from following Yahweh, and that you have built you an altar, and that ye might rebel this day against Yahweh?" Okay, so the first question that they are asking is, why is it that you guys think that you can build an altar of your own, despite pretty much the commandment, you know, that tells them there to build no altars in such way? And in a way, it's the first thought in Israel's mind of the division after the golden calf that may make something, make a huge impact upon the people of Israel. And then he goes on to say, "Is the iniquity of Peor too little for us?" And remember, this is Phinehas who was there for the iniquity of Peor, the issue we had spoke of. And it says, "From which we are not cleansed unto this day, although there was a plague in the congregation of Yahweh. But that ye must turn away this day from following Yahweh, and it will be, seeing ye rebel today against Yahweh, that tomorrow he will be wroth with the whole congregation of Israel. Notwithstanding, if the land of your possession be unclean, then pass ye over unto the land of the possession of Yahweh, wherein Yahweh's tabernacle dwelleth, and take possession among us, but rebel not against Yahweh, nor against us, in building you an altar beside the altar of Yahweh our God." Okay, so one of the things that has to be thought about here also is the incredible level of brotherly love that is being offered here. All right, these other tribes that came to plead with the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh, they are asking them to just say, "Come over and live with us. If your land is not good enough, if you have a problem in your land, if there's something wrong with it, if it's unclean," is the word they use, "then, you know, if it has idolatry or something like that going on in it, come and live with us. If it's not holy, come and live with us. We'll give you a place to live among us, and we'll continue to divide inheritance, you know, with you." And so the people were more concerned with the well-being, the spiritual well-being of Israel as a whole congregation, and the purity of them before Yahweh, than it was with their personal possessions, the things that they owned. So I think that that's an important thing to consider when trying to keep the people of Israel together in our modern day, that we have very little people that even think in that way, that they would help their brothers out of bondage, out of sin, in order to save them from the situation that may be worse. 20 goes on to say, "Did not Achan the son of Zerah commit a trespass in the accursed thing, and wrath fell on all the congregation of Israel, and that man perished not alone in his iniquity? Then the children of Reuben, and the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh answered and said unto the heads of the thousands of Israel, Yahweh God of gods, the Lord," or Yahweh God of gods, they say it twice, "He knows, and Israel, he shall know if it be in rebellion, or if in transgression against Yahweh. Save us not this day, that we have built us an altar to turn from following Yahweh, or if to offer thereon burnt offerings or meat offerings, or to offer peace offerings thereon, let Yahweh himself require it." So they're putting out the plea to God here, and what they're asking, and it's a little bit confusing in the language, is what they're asking is that if they've done something wrong, let Yahweh judge, let God judge between the right and the wrong, the thing that they have done, if they've actually done something wrong. But they're saying, they're saying in kind of a backwards way, we have not built this altar for this purpose, and so you're misjudging the situation. But if this is still wrong, let God judge, but pretty much you can't, because we haven't done anything wrong yet. And 24, he goes on to say, "If we have not rather done it for fear of this thing." So they're saying, we've done it for the very opposite. And then he's going to go on to explain, saying, "In time to come," here's what he's saying to the princes, "In time to come, your children might speak unto our children and say, What have you to do with Yahweh, the God of Israel? For Yahweh has made Jordan a border now between us and you, ye children of Reuben and children of Gad. You have no part in Yahweh. So shall your children make our children cease from fearing Yahweh. So instead, the complete opposite is going on, and what Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh are trying to say is your children are going to come to our children, and they're going to say, you aren't Israelites. You don't live on this side of the Jordan. Therefore, you have nothing to do with Yahweh. You can't come to the tabernacle to worship. You can't come before Yahweh as a congregation, as a nation. So the fear is that these people will not be considered to be Israelites. So they build the altar as a memorial. Okay, and the memorial or the witness that is going to be there is at the crossing of the Jordan, the place, the very place where Israel crossed, to mark this spot, to call into remembrance this situation. So this is a good example of how when believers, Israel believers even, are together, they do not have the ability to know what's in another man's heart or mind. And they make a judgment saying, it looks to me like you're doing something wrong, and so they speak out of turn. All right, in this case here, nobody had done anything drastic yet. They actually sent to do exactly as Deuteronomy 13 required, do a diligent search into the matter to find out if it was actually so. They didn't send the army in first and start, war with the people, and start killing anybody or threatening to do something. What they did was they diligently inquired into the matter. And the diligent inquisition of the situation is what makes it a righteous situation, because too many times, even in personal and small matters between congregations or between people in a congregation, let alone a nation, do people assume that someone has done something wrong, so they've judged them already, and they treat them as if the matter is judged. And the matter is not judged, because no diligent inquiry has ever been made into the circumstance. So this is an important situation, an important example of how a very high sin, a sin which could have caused an entire tribe, two and a half tribes of men to be wiped out from existence in a war if it was not executed properly, if this due process, if you will, would not have been performed. And so we have to consider this not only in the great national level that we're reading it in, but in a lower level of personal situation, which I think follows exactly what Christ teaches when he talks about a brother who is in fault and going to him and speaking to him and bringing him before the church and so on before you decide you're going to excommunicate him. It's the same idea, only on a smaller level. Okay, we have to follow the law of God, okay, in order to be lawful. You know, the law has to be followed lawfully in order for it to really be the law, for the spirit of the law to come forward out of it. And that can't be stressed anymore, because too often times do you have self-righteousness and indignation that ends up coming out of this, is righteous, so-called righteous indignation that comes out of a situation like this, and the people are really just trying to justify themselves. Okay, but we can see from the personality of the princes here and from Phinehas that it was pure love of the brethren that was on their mind. They wanted to turn them and be sure, and they offered them everything they possibly could in order to get them to repent before they sent a destructive force in there to execute the law, which would not have been execution of the law. It would have been murder if it was incorrect. So it's very important that we follow the law lawfully, not only in our personal lives, but in our national dealings as well. So, very important thing to remember. Continuing to 26, therefore we said, let us now prepare to build us an altar, not for burnt offerings, not for sacrifice, but that it may be a witness between us and you and our generations after us, that we might do the service of Yahweh before him without burnt offerings, without sacrifice, and with our peace offerings. I think I said out the last two times, which is incorrect. That your children may not say to our children in time to come, ye have no part in Yahweh. Therefore said we that it shall be when they should so say to us or to our generations in time to come, that we may say again, behold, the pattern of the altar of Yahweh, which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings, not for sacrifice, but it is a witness between us and you. God forbid that we should rebel against Yahweh and turn this day from following Yahweh to build an altar for burnt offerings, for meat offerings, for sacrifices, beside the altar of Yahweh our God that is before his tabernacle. And when Phinehas the priest and the princes of the congregation and the heads of the thousands of Israel which were with him heard the words that the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the children of Manasseh spake, it pleased them. And Phinehas the son of Eleazar the priest said unto the children of Reuben and to the children of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh, this day we perceive that Yahweh is among us, because ye have not committed this trespass against Yahweh. Now ye have delivered the children of Israel out of the hand of Yahweh. So once again, they built this. This is another level of information. They built this altar in the pattern of the tabernacle. They built it to look like the tabernacle is arranged inside as a witness to say, hey, we built this because it looks like that one. We are your brethren. We knew how it looked. Our fathers helped build the one, therefore we built the other to look this way. But we didn't do it for sacrifice. We did not do it to worship upon it. We did it as a witness. And Phinehas is now relieved and happy that it proves that Yahweh is among the children of Israel because of this level of judgment that was used, now that he understands the reason behind it. Okay, so it is pretty important, and he says not only that, but it delivered Israel out of the hand of Yahweh by like punishment or cursing or in some other destructive nature if it would have been true that they had done something wrong. And Phinehas the son of Eleazar the priest and the princes returned from the children of Reuben and from the children of Gad out of the land of Gilead unto the land of Canaan to the children of Israel and brought them word again. And the thing pleased the children of Israel, and the children of Israel blessed God, and they did not intend to go up against them in battle to destroy the land wherein the children of Reuben and Gad dwelt. And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad called the altar, okay, it says here in the King James text, Ed, all right, for it shall be a witness between us that Yahweh is God. Okay, I'm going to make a point here. Ed would be, it's actually a little different, but I'm not going to get into that right now. Ed is supposedly the Hebrew word that would be for witness. Okay, and it's a similar word that would be for witness. It would be the same word for a sign or a symbol of things. Okay, but in the King James Version, it rightly has it in italics because in the Hebrew text, it does not appear. The word Ed is not there. It should read like this. It says, "And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad called the altar, for it was a witness, okay, between us and Yahweh, that Yahweh is God." Okay, the name of the altar truly is not Ed. The name of the altar is, it is a witness between that Yahweh is God. Okay, the witness that Yahweh is God was the name of the altar, okay, because that was the witness, what it witnessed. All right, and so that's not horribly important, I suppose, but at the same time, it is what the scriptures actually say, as opposed to just a name like Ed, you know, like a person, as a name would be. And so we dwell sometimes on small things and don't see the bigger meaning, and then sometimes in translation it takes away from the meaning as well whenever we see small things like that. And so I think this would be a good place to end, and we'll finish the book of Joshua next week in the next weekly message.